Good morning. Welcome to The Morning Show. I'm Ron Froude. Today, we're very pleased to be able to welcome State Senator Howard Markline, who serves the 17th Senatorial District, and State Representative Tony Kurtz is in the studio with us as well. Representative Kurtz serves the people of the 50th Assembly District. Gentlemen, it's good to have both of you in the studio with us today, and extend to you and your families, your staff, season's greetings.
Thank you. Yes, you too. We started our, like you did, some of our family Christmas yesterday with my sisters and nieces and nephews, and so that was a lot of fun to kind of kick off, a week-long celebration here of Christmas. So, yeah, Christmas wishes to everybody.
To you as well, Tony. Glad to have you in the studio.
Thank you,
today.
Ron. It's wonderful to be here, and wish you and your family and all your listeners a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year. Looking forward to the holiday season.
Well, the people of Wisconsin re-elected a Democratic governor, mm-hmm. re-elected a Republican legislature. As we citizens of Wisconsin, Tony, look to this next legislative session, what can we expect, and are there ways that we can get past some of the challenges that have existed in terms of agreement on what needs to be done for our state?
I think we, you know, it's in our, there's going to be two rule of thoughts, you know, do you work with the governor or don't work with the governor? I guess I'm in the camp, we need to work with the governor, you know, we need to govern now. And it is interesting to talk a little bit of the election, that just the number of people, when you look at the numbers, how many people actually voted for Senator Ron Johnson that turned around and voted for Governor Evers. So, and then turn around and vote maybe for a Republican or Democrat in the Senate or State Senate, State Assembly. So I think, to your point, I think the people have spoken. I think they're comfortable with split government, and now it's our responsibility to work with the governor. I think we're going to find some things we got to work on. I think shared revenue, I know some things we're going to talk about here with the budget coming up. A lot of people don't realize, you know, the state legislature did two really good state budgets that this, you know, Governor Evers signed. And I think that's going to be at least my focus as we move into the discussions on the next state budget, to find a good budget that both parties are going to be comfortable with, and the most importantly, it's going to help our Wisconsin citizens, especially people here in Richland County.
Howard, I'll pose the same question to you. What do you see moving forward? Can the state and the legislature and the governor work together?
Oh, I sure hope so, at least on the big issues. The biggest bill that we'll be working on, of course, is the state budget, and that begins probably mid-February when we get the governor's budget at that time, and that's kind of begins the process. But that is by far the biggest piece of legislation the legislature will be taking up. And as Tony mentioned, you know, we've had the last two budgets the governor has signed. They were good budgets, and it's my intention to put together another good budget for the citizens of the state. So, you know, other issues, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, there are a couple of rural issues that the governor vetoed, like on rural EMS and stuff, and that isn't going away, and we're planning on having some rural EMS meetings with our rural EMS units right after the first of the year to kind of revisit with our local people and making sure that we understand what their needs are and the concerns are. And it's my plan to bring that back again, and we may make some tweaks, and hopefully you know, we can talk to the governor and get him to approve that and this time. So also broadband, that was something too that the governor vetoed last time, and the rural broadband changes, we've talked to, you know, people in the business just recently, and you know, fundamentally it was what probably needs to get done here. And so again, hopefully we can have more communication with the governor's office, and hopefully you know, they'll support the proposals that we put in front of them.
Well, there are lots of issues to talk about, but in our community, without any question, the most significant is the future of the UW-Platteville Richland, Howard. Let's just begin with an overview from your point of view.
Well, you know, I found out about this, as I think Tony did. I think it was the day before or the afternoon before the announcement was made. So, and as I've told people, I was told, you know, what they were going to do. And it's very disappointing. You know, Tony and I didn't have a role in that decision that was made at the administration, UW administration level. We're going to keep working on it and do what we can. I don't know how final the decision is. I'm fearful that, you know, it's going to be hard for the UW president to backtrack much on this thing. But, you know, again, it's disappointing. This happens on other issues where I think sometimes people sitting in Madison don't understand the impact that some of their decisions have here in our local communities. And sometimes it's not just a dollar and cents kind of impact. It's, you know, that campus has been part of the fabric of this community for a long time. And many people have gone there, have worked there, taught there. And so it's more than just an economic decision that was made, I believe, by the Board of Regents.
How about you, Tony? What was your reaction when you heard the news that the UW-Platteville-Richland would have no more academic classes after this spring semester?
I was shocked. You know, I was shocked how swift the decision was. Just to Howard's point, I got a call by, you know, Mr. Rothman, told me basically, you know, this is what we're going to be doing. And it did surprise me. I thought maybe they would reduce their footprint over time. I know that was talk, but just, you know, the drastic that, hey, we're basically done here. And to Howard's point, I don't see where this is going to get reversed. And I know that's going to be hard for people to hear. I know there's a lot of passion. My daughter went there. My daughter, you know, was on the dean's list. I got to give the commencement speech the year she graduated. Trust me, she has cried about this too, because she's very upset, just like everybody else in the community. But we have to move forward, and I think that's the part of the thing that we need. And, you know, Howard and I met with the mayor today. We're going to meet with some county folks later to see what is, you know, what can we do moving forward. And I think that's one of the most important things that Howard and I can do is listen and do the best we can moving forward.
I think the difficult thing, you know, listening to the community and otherwise and being a part of it, Howard, is that many feel that the UW-Richland was sabotaged, that it was, you know, former Senator Schultz said it was bleeding, it was bled to death, that there were all these decisions that were made that adversely impacted the campus's future. And that's what makes this difficult to be able to accept or to understand.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this... You know, the regionalization, I don't know, that was 5-6 years ago when they did that. And of course, you know, that, and I've reflected too, like in my private sector experience in our CPA firm, when you start, you know, having an office that was autonomous and suddenly you put it under an umbrella of a bunch of other offices and you know, I don't know, it, I can tell you in the private sector too, it didn't end up well. And I got a feeling that, and I don't know if that was a conscious decision when they did that back again 5 or 6 years ago, or if, trying to absorb these smaller campuses around the state or not. But it certainly ended up that way, you know, which isn't good for us here in Richland Center.
For President Rothman and others, for those who have chose to send their children or students who've wished to attend UW-Richland and live at home, avoid the cost of a meal plan and dorms and all the other things that go with the four-year university, all of a sudden, what might have been an accessible and affordable education, I mean, the door is closed. You know, is the Wisconsin idea still alive? Does it still have potential? Does that make any difference, you know, in this whole decision and discussion going forward?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. And I can't answer for Jay Rothman, certainly. But, you know, it does impact people and families. And, you know, that was one of the models that I've talked to people that are CPAs that began their college career at two-year campuses, got those first 2 years done virtually debt-free, living at home, and got off, and then they went to UW-Madison and finished their studies at UW-Madison in accounting. And, you know, the model has worked pretty well. And so you're right. I mean, it does affect us out here in a big way.
The other thing that I think just bothers a lot of people is the fact that Richland was barred from doing things, the whole issue of having a recruiter that the Richland County Campus Foundation was willing to pay for, but they were not given the opportunity. They were told, no, you can't do that, which I think to a lot of local people is, does this make any sense? If someone's willing to pay to support the own institution, and it's a part of the institution that supported it for many, many years since its establishment, you know, who do you hold accountable for saying, no, that wasn't the right decision? Why do we have to bear the ramifications thereof?
Right. And that certainly supports the theory that, you know, this was sabotage, you know, and because, you know, it's one thing to tell somebody, I want you to succeed, do it, you know, to grow and thrive, and whether it's a campus or a business or a branch or whatever, but then to, you know, get cut off at the knees and starve you from the resources you need to do that is pretty tough.
Did you get a chance to read Dr. Patrick Hagen's letter in the Richland Observer, letter to the editor?
I don't think I did. I don't recall.
Well, he reviewed, and I remember him talking about it back in 2015 when all of this was taking place. You know, if you could go back, would you still take the money away from the university? You know, in terms of, you know, when their a budget reserve was found and it was their budget was cut, would you still do the same thing?
Well, that had no impact whatsoever on campuses. Those are tuition dollars. Okay, those were tuition dollars that did not go to support camp. They were going to the bank. You know, I could trace every single dollar of the tuition increase for the previous, 7, 8, 9 years. They weren't using it at all. So I don't think it had any impact at all on the decision. I don't think it had any impact here on the enrollment here at UW-Richland.
But was it reserve, though, that the university could have used?
They were charging our students, they increased the tuition 5.5% every single year, and they didn't spend a dime of it. They put it in the bank, okay? I'm not sure if they even knew, the Board of Regents didn't even know they had the money, you know, so I don't think it had any impact, again, here locally.
But I've had a lot of people who've sent me notes and otherwise and have said, how does that compare to what the state has in a surplus now? You know, is there an analogy between what Wisconsin has with its $6.6 billion surplus and what the university had at one point as a reserve to be able to use?
Well, we can talk about this when we get into the budget a little bit, but the surplus we have right now in the state is largely based on one-time money, okay? The state of Wisconsin, I say the state, but the federal government dropped over $50 billion into the state. That goes to hospitals, counties, individuals, PPP loans to businesses, you know, all those kinds of things. And it had a huge impact on the economic activity in the state, obviously. And so the surplus that the state has, and we met with Fiscal Bureau last week, is a lot of that's one-time money, okay? Whereas when you look at the question you posed earlier about the tuition, I mean, that's an ongoing increase in the cost to our students. I don't know if there's a direct comparison between those two reserves.
Should the rest of the centers, the UW colleges as they were once known, should they be scared to death now for their community and the future of their higher education?
I don't know any more than you do about this, Ron, but I, you know, if I'm in one of those other, you know, campuses, I would. I mean, it's, you know, if my neighbor in the next foxhole got shot, it sure makes me nervous. And I think that, yeah, I would be. I'd certainly be concerned if I were another one of the two-year campuses around the state.
Are you going to have a chance to meet with students? Otherwise, you know, what things will you be doing in the future? You talked about there were some things you wanted to do, Howard.
Well, you know, we're going to continue to talk, you know, with the UW system folks, you know, to see if there's any. And we've, you know, just the other last week we talked again and expressed our concern with what's going on here and stuff. And they're telling us that they're going to do all they can and to transfer students and transfer, you know, staff here to other campuses, but you know, I guess I just encourage people to reach out to us if they're a student here or staff, you know, and got, you know, and I don't know that we can intervene to the extent we can. You know, we're not system doesn't have to listen to us. Obviously, they didn't listen to us at all on this issue.
Can joint finance do anything?
Well, is it, I mean, Tony and I have talked about this, if there's a way, I mean, this decision also has an impact on the county, on Richland County. And so, you know, we've talked about that as a possibility, you know, looking at, you know, other ways that we can, that we should be looking at, you know, the impact here to Richland County and how we may want to be able to address that in the budget process.
You want to weigh on that in a little bit, Tony, as well?
I would like to go back and just... it is my humble opinion that the interim chancellor down at Platteville did not see this coming herself, because I know like a month or so ago she was on the air talking about
almost 2 weeks,
about the different program, and I think that sits. I think that's also what's bothering the community so much, is that, you know, for so many years we've been saying here in Platteville saying they're committed to the campus, they're committed to the campus. Then, you know, it was probably 6 or 7 months ago where Howard and I met with Mr. Rothman, and that's when they mentioned, well, maybe having a reduced footprint, and then to boom, you know, and that's why I truly do think this was system's decision. Now, to your point, are there going to be other campuses? What your listeners have to understand, and I know they're not going to like this, but when you look at the two-year campuses statewide, the last 10 years, their enrollment has dropped by 50%. We also have some four-year campuses that are in very dire strait. Now, I know people will look at the money. Well, it's also, unfortunately, demographics. And we're just not having huge populations, and you're seeing that. You're not only seeing it at the college level, but you're seeing it in our K-12 education. And the worst part about this is it's only going to get worse. Particularly, you know, I was listening to the interim superintendent where he's talking about the 6th and 7th graders now. When they're seniors, there's another huge drop off of that age group going into college or technical colleges. So, unfortunately, I think you're probably going to see some more closures. And I will go this far. I do think this is a huge economic impact, not only just a blow to the community. And I do think, I know Howard and I have talked about this. I know I'm going to try to do my part on the Joint Finance Committee. I know he's committed to do something to hopefully get past this, where we can help the county and the city absorb this, because it's a blow. I mean, it's part of the community. It's been the part of the, my daughter went there. I know that set her up for her success at UW-Madison. She's in pharmacy school, and that all started at this campus with that quality education. So trust me, I get it. It's just the community has to understand there's so many more moving parts to this that I know people don't understand that, and it's hard to understand that. It's just there's a lot of different things with demographics that are just against us right now, unfortunately. So
I think, though, in some ways, Tony, there will be those around the state, and it's a concern locally, who will say, okay, there are only 60 students at UW-Platteville Richland. And who can say, well, that isn't practical. But then will they understand all these other circumstances that the campus faced, you know, losing its professors, losing the international program, losing a recruiter, not being allowed to have a recruiter? In a court of law, that would change the whole argument. And so all of a sudden, you know, it's a different issue than the 60, which is more an endpoint to the result of a whole group of cascading decisions.
And so I was there when the foundation, you know, I sat across from, you know, wonderful Darlo, who made the offer to then Chancellor Shields about, and I even actually talked to Chancellor Shields about it. So that is very disturbing that they said, hey, we'll pay for a recruiter. And they turned it down. Now, this is me. I'm speaking for myself. I don't think Platteville wanted to give them a recruiter, because Platteville's got a good freshman class right now. But at the last several classes for Platteville, has been very low as well. So there, everybody's competing against X number of students. And I think Platteville at that time, they were trying to get students. And to your point, you know, unfortunately, and I've said this publicly, you know, they were cannibalizing from Richland, Baraboo, because they needed their numbers. So I know it's hard. Trust me, I don't like this any more than anybody else, but it's something that I... And I think when I go back to my colleagues, because I do, I have to, because that's all my colleagues are going to focus on is, well, they only had 60 students. And then when I share them the rest, what my colleagues have to understand in the assembly, state assembly, is your two-year campus or your four-year campus may be next. So how do we, I don't want to say alleviate the pain, because I don't think that pain will ever go away, but how do we try to help that community get past that? And that's an argument that I'm going to have behind closed doors with my colleagues. So.
I think it's also difficult, Howard, when we try to estimate the cultural impact of UW-Platteville-Richland, the people, adults who learned how to use computers and take pictures and do arts and crafts and garden and all these other things that have made such an incredible impact, especially prior to 2015. Taking that away from the well-being of the community is an incredible hit before we talk about all of these other issues as well.
Right. Like I said earlier, I mean, it's a cultural thing. The opportunities that we're here in this community because of UW-Richland is incredible. You just don't have that kind of opportunity in a community this size unless you've got that campus. So, yeah, the ripple effect goes far beyond the dollars and cents of tuition and staffing and all that. There's and it's going to be felt for a long time.
What can people do, in your opinion, to make a difference right now in this issue of saving UW-Richland?
I don't know. I mean, the decision is made at system, and I don't. We can, and we'll be, as Tony mentioned, we're going to be talking about this in the next upcoming budget. Just weigh in, I guess, let people know what they're thinking on this issue. And we've heard from, a lot of people, obviously we've been out and about and with emails and stuff like that, but, we can do what we can. I don't want to over promise, that there's imminent hope. At this point in time, because I don't know that there is, and I don't know what the circumstances is going to be, like Tony said, that system is going to reverse their course. It was pretty crisp, when Tony and I were told what was going to happen, and the communication, there wasn't much ambiguity in there at all. It was. This will happen on this date kind of thing. And so for them to reverse course, I'm not as hopeful as some people are.
How about you, Tony? Is there advice that you would give to listeners about what they can do?
I think I kind of want to echo what Senator Markline said. Write in for suggestions, but, when we were basically told, once again, I think people can have some wonderful solutions about what that future looks like with or without a campus. Because I personally think there is some opportunities for the community. And I think that's, and I know the leaders here in the community are talking about that. I know the county board is very focused on this right now, as they should be, especially when you talk about all the different budget issues going on with the county. But I think, just let us know what your suggestions are. But unfortunately, I don't think, to Howard's point, I don't think system is going to change their mind. And I also think there's going to be other campuses in the state that's probably going to have, unfortunately, the same fate.
Is there something you'd like to say about this issue that I didn't give you the opportunity to, Tony?
No, and like I said, I've been to a lot of meetings down here. I know this is such a very heartfelt, everybody's very grieving right now. But I just have to understand Howard and I are feeling the same. We're disgusted, really, But I think we can move on as a community, and I hope people are willing to have that discussion to how do we move forward. And I think that's important that we have those discussions.
Howard, is there something else you wanted to say that I didn't give you a chance to?
No, I wanted to follow up on a comment Tony made earlier about the demographics, you know, here in this state. And we're seeing it across the state, and unfortunately we're seeing it here in Richland County, and that is the number of students graduating from our high schools will peak in 2025, and then it drops off quite a bit. So, you know, the project, and that's one of those things that from a planning standpoint that we know we can see this out 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years from now. We know how many first graders there are and fifth graders and sixth, you know, all the way through the system. So the numbers don't look good as you go out. And I'm talking about statewide now, not just, but Richland County, we mirror the same, got the same numbers here. If you look at here at Richland School District or at Richland K-12 system here, I mean, I don't know what they're graduating next May, but look at the sixth grade enrollment, seventh grade, you know, there's a big drop off here. And so, you know, that's coming down the pipeline here too. And also last week, I was in Highland for a meeting with some people on childcare, and there were two retired generals at that meeting, and they shared with me a statistic I thought was interesting, that there's 77% of the people coming out of high school today are not eligible to be in the military because of lack of training, because of health issues, obesity being one of them. So there's 23% of these, you know, students that are eligible for the military. Those are the same people that we're competing, that employers are competing for, that our universities are competing for, our tech colleges are competing for. And it was a disturbing statistic that I heard last week, that, you know, about, you know, I see all these, even the numbers are going to drop off, but the eligible students that are potentially could go into the military is really a small fraction of those. And again, those are the same people at all our campuses in the state are competing for as well.
State Senator Howard Markline, State Representative Tony Kurtz, who are our guests on the morning show today. Thanks for being with us. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. Welcome back to the conversation on the morning show today, where State Senator Howard Markline and State Representative Tony Kurtz are our guests. Thinking about budget, certainly that's important. Shared revenue has been talked about a lot, Howard, where that goes, how counties are surviving. And again, Richland County is a kind of a hotbed of that whole circumstance. You know, where do you see the budget going, and what message can you deliver to the people here and beyond?
Well, there's a lot of conversation going on right now regarding the whole shared revenue formula. And, you know, that formula was set up in 2004. It's long before Tony or I even thought about being the legislature. So, you know, it's been around for a long time. And we all recognize that it's got problems, okay? And a community or a county like Richland, that is not a, you know, wealthy county, has an incredibly difficult time competing with the more prosperous counties in the state. We're as far as growth, population growth, we're low growth. We don't have a lot of net new construction here. And so, you know, we're looking at that very seriously. And this includes, and right now we've got the Wisconsin Counties Association, the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, and the Wisconsin Towns Association are all working on a framework. And there's still a lot of work to do yet on that, but it's, and we need all of them to kind of buy in on what the new formula would look like. But, you know, it includes Milwaukee County. I met with Milwaukee County exec last week, and he gets it, you know, from a political standpoint. you know, Milwaukee County isn't going to get anything unless rural Wisconsin comes out ahead. And so, and, you know, that's part of the hopefully the grand proposal here is that we come up with a process that all rural counties especially benefit from it. So, and Richland County is obviously the, you know, tip of the spear here as far as the problems with the current current formula. So I talked to the highway commissioner last week. Same thing with transportation aids, you know, our general transportation aids. And I've talked to a number of Richland County highway commissioners in the past about this. You know, it's a GTA is a reimbursement based system, okay, where you have to expend the money and then you get reimbursed. You compete with the rest of the counties in the state for reimbursement. How does Richland County compete percentage wise with Dane County? So we have put more money into GTA for the last several budgets, yet I think Richland County's GTA may have dropped because, again, we can't compete here against the more affluent counties that have got the resources to fund things and then wait for reimbursement. So so like Josh Elder, he's coming in a couple weeks to meet with me and talk about some things here. And hopefully we can consider, you know, in the next state budget. So sitting here today, I am very optimistic that we're going to have a new shared revenue formula. And I think that it's important for us as members of Joint Finance Committee that before we start, just putting more money in the shared revenue isn't the answer. I don't know that we'll end up with more money here in Richland County with the current shared revenue formula. So, you know, we need, before we start dumping more money in the shared revenue, we need to take a look at the fundamentals of that whole formula and where the money goes, how it's distributed around the state of Wisconsin.
Mayor Coppernol and County Board Chair Brewer have talked a lot about net new construction. It's become a part of our vocabulary. And if I'm remembering right, when Southwest Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission did a survey, they said Richland County would need the equivalent of 3 super Walmarts every year to be able to keep up. And I think we all know what the reality is there. That's not going to happen.
Right. Or how many new houses have to be built here in Richland County or the city of Richland Center? I mean, it's just, you know, it's just unrealistic to, we can't compete here, you know. So, you know, in Sauk County, you know, they benefit from being in the shadow of Wisconsin Dells, you know, Lake Delton. You know, they've got some pretty big economic drivers there that county benefits from. We don't have it here, you know, in Richland County. So, anyway, but I'm, you know, the conversations are going on right now, and it's great. You know, sometimes things have to get bad before there's substantive change, you know. And I think for many of our rural counties in the state, we aren't the only one here in Richland County. This is being felt all over the state of Wisconsin. I think that things have gotten bad enough that you know, it's really driving the conversation now between the cities, cities, counties, in the state of Wisconsin and the townships as well. Their towns are, our townships are right at the table, you know, in that conversation. So hopefully, you know, and, you know, we're kind of hoping to get this, you know, done sooner than later, because, you know, that's going to have a big impact on the budget and what we do in the budget.
How about you, Tony? We think about shared revenue. Is that something you're hearing a lot from constituents as you travel the 50th Assembly District and did before the election?
Oh, you know, I'm actually kind of the lead on in the Assembly on this. So I've met several times with the County Association, the League of Municipalities, and the Wisconsin Towns Association. Matter of fact, last week had over a three-hour meeting with all three of them. So about moving forward, just to give you a little snapshot, like, so Richland County, they're part of shared revenues, like $1.2 million. I know there's been some proposals. I believe the governor came out during the campaign that he'd increase it by 10%. Well, that's only $120,000 for Richland County. So we do need to look at the formula. It's like Howard said, that formula is made up of four components, and a big part of that is net new construction. Well, that doesn't help Richland County, it doesn't help Juneau County, Vernon County, you know, Crawford County, all these smaller counties, rural counties are just not growing, unfortunately. And so we do have to look at it. It's interesting. Fiscal Bureau a couple weeks ago, I asked, you know, give me every municipality in the state their portion of shared revenue. And for some, and I should have brought the list with me, I didn't even think about it, but, you know, some communities are getting 89 cents per person versus some communities might be getting $581 per person. So, I mean, you're looking at two different streams. Obviously, the 581 per person is very, I think it was Menominee County, which is a lot of tribes and things like that. So it's a very poor county. And then the 0.89 is a very affluent county, probably somewhere over, you know, suburbs of Milwaukee. So it's, to Howard's point, it's very disjointed on that formula. And so we're not only looking at the formula, you know, we're looking at a lot of different things. And Howard mentioned Milwaukee. I too met with the mayor and the county executive. A lot of people in our state don't understand all the public employees around here are in the Wisconsin retirement system. Milwaukee employees, county employees, you know, law enforcement in Milwaukee, they have their own pension fund. And the issue is that pension is probably going to go bankrupt. And so in this big scheme of things, not only does shared revenue is, you know, as a state, are we going to let this pension system go belly up? And I think that's kind of hard when we have retirees from Milwaukee that live, my neighbor, literally, Tom Brummeyer up in beautiful Waniwak is a retired police officer in Milwaukee. So those are some of the discussions we have that, you know, we have some big financial issues. And I know people look at the $6 billion surplus. Well, from the people in my office, they've already spent that a couple times over. So we've got to be very fiscally responsible. But shared revenue, in my humble opinion, is probably the number one thing we need to tackle this budget cycle. And how we, because the inflationary pressure, you know, this was probably going to come sooner or later. It's just the inflationary pressures over the last, you know, 12 to 18 months has just exploded the need for more resources.
So, given the opportunity, where would you like to see proceeds of whatever is determined to be appropriate to be invested of the $6.6 billion? Where would you like to see that used, Tony?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think, and you've heard other people, I mean, I do think we need to look at tax cuts. I mean, I personally like to target more to the property taxes. I mean, I know there's going to be a lot of discussion on that. Shared revenue is going to be a part of that too, because right now, you know, the communities don't share in what the state's been collecting. So I do think we need to look at that. But I'd like to see some tax cuts. I'd like to see, obviously, more investments into infrastructure. And to Howard's point, there is a lot of money coming to the state, not only just the investments we've made over the last couple of state budgets, but there's a lot of federal money coming down. But I think we need to do more, especially for rural areas and on the infrastructure broad and the broadband. Broadband's still not going to go away. We still have communities. I mean, once again, there's still a lot of money in broadband. But now it's like, how do you get the service to that, you know, that last mile? That's going to be the discussion. That's one of the bills, unfortunately, the governor vetoed last session. You're going to see something like that coming back up, because we've got to continue. I mean, just this summer, I mean, I'm all excited about it because I had broadband put in front of my house. I hooked up about a month ago, and it is astounding how you go from 3 to 5 megabytes to 50 megabytes. It's, and I hate to use this term, it's a game changer. It truly is. It gives me a lot more opportunities from my home to do things that I couldn't do, you know, a month ago. So,
and to that end, there's been publicity, but it's important talking about if you do have broadband where you live, really where there's less than a month to kind of weigh in and make sure that what the state says we have and what the federal government thinks we have are somewhere on the same page, Howard.
Right. So the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, has put out maps of broadband availability and speeds around the country, okay? And this is based, their maps are based on what the providers have supplied to the FCC, okay? And it's our responsibility as homeowners now to make sure that the information, the data that's in that FCC map is accurate. And so, you know, you've talked about this. We're encouraging everybody, especially in our rural areas here, to check their speeds. And there's a website at the FCC. It's www.broadbandmap.fcc.gov. And you go in and you put your address in there, and then you can check the, again, the data, the number of providers that the FCC has on record, the speeds that they have, that the providers have told the FCC. And then you can challenge that information, basically, because what the providers, the internet providers, a lot of the data they provide to the FCC is based on census block data, okay, that they serve an area. Well, you know what? They may serve, Ron, you and Tony, but I may be in the same census block. I may not have any service. The FCC needs to know that, okay? The state of Wisconsin will be receiving, I think it's $1.1 billion here in the down the road for broadband expansion, hopefully for a lot of our rural areas. The PSC just received $5 million for the mapping part of this, which is part of what I just talked about. So we have till January 13th to go online and look at your speeds and see, and even the number of providers that the FCC says you have, and challenge that. And that's going to be critical for us, you know, to do that. And I've even heard, you know, someplace, if you don't have broadband, you're going to have to probably go to a library to make sure that you log in to let the FCC know that I live out, you know, in rural part of my district, and I don't have internet at all, even though maybe that census block indicates that I do.
The other thing is that the FCC looks at satellite coverage, which may make our map look like we have lots of coverage, when in essence, we do not.
Right. Yeah, it's, I mean, there's, I think that the maps are a bit optimistic in terms of both availability of providers, and the goal is to have choice, you know, that there isn't just one provider in an area. But so the number of providers, I think that's a little bit optimistic on the maps. And I think the speeds are also tend to be a little bit on the optimistic, maybe the best case scenario. And last week when we had, during the snowstorm, I went in and checked, and my broadband was not very good during that snowstorm last week. And it wasn't that bad of a snowstorm, really. So,
State Representative Tony Kurtz and State Senator Howard Markland are our guests. We'll take a break. When we come back, maybe we can get an update on the Lone Rock Bridge project, something that we've talked about considerably and important to this area. We've had many opportunities to talk about the importance of the Lone Rock bridges, their age, and the challenges in replacing them. State Representative Howard Markline, State Representative Tony Kurtz are our guests on the program today. Howard, some things are happening, aren't they?
Yes. I just crossed the Wisconsin River Bridge at Lone Rock last week on my way to a meeting, and that project is being constructed under the design build concept. And there's three pilot projects in the state of Wisconsin. And I think we're fortunate that we got one of those projects right here in our backyard across the Wisconsin River. Obviously, those three bridges are in need of being replaced. They're just, we can't sugarcoat it at all. So that process has begun, the construction, and the construction began. It's they've cut all the trees down in the path, the footprint for the new bridge. So if people are traveling on 130 south of Lone Rock, they can see exactly where the bridge is going to go and cross the river. So I'm really happy that you know, we're going to be able to see some progress here over the next year, and it's going to be a big project, obviously. But I think the project is a good one for design build. It's going to compress the time frame of construction from the time that they're starting it with all of the permits and studies and all, you know, real estate acquisition, all the things they have to go through. They're going to be doing a lot of those things concurrently, which is good, and we're going to benefit from it out here.
Well, let's take the last minute or so to, you know, a final word or a Christmas greeting or anything you'd like, Tony, to be able to wrap up our conversation.
Anything
today.
I'd like.
Wish for New Year's, yeah, but I'll limit you to about 30 seconds.
Oh, no, I just want to wish everybody here in Richland County and Richland Center a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year. You know, we've got a lot of challenges, but we still have a lot to be thankful for. And I know I'm thankful for so many things in my life and for the community we have. We have a very giving community, a very loving community, and I think that's something people need to cherish, because unfortunately we don't see that in other parts of our state and our country. So God bless everybody. Thank you.
Is there a New Year's resolution that will be on Representative Kurt's list?
Probably to be a little bit more patient.
Okay.
Because, you know, I'm a lot like everybody. You know, you want to see results, and unfortunately sometimes things take a little time to get there.
That's why I like mowing the yard. You can just see the difference you're making right now.
That's probably why I like farming too, because you can see right away, boy, I really screwed that up. I need to...
How about you, Howard? Final word you'd like to be able to share?
I just wanted to mention that last week they lit the Christmas tree in the rotunda of the Capitol. It's a 30-foot balsam from Medford. There's like 1,000 ornaments on there. Wisconsin Waters is the theme. And right now the Capitol is decorated very nicely. So, like next week, this week we've got a lot of meetings going on and stuff, but next week is, from a legislative standpoint, is pretty dead. So, you know, if families have some time next week, they want to stop down to the Capitol and enjoy the Capitol and all the trimmings and all that, especially for the young kids, it's a great opportunity to come down. And again, Merry Christmas to everybody, and have a safe New Year.
Sounds good. Thanks for being here today. We'll look forward to seeing you again next year. Thank you for being a part of today's morning show.